Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com for your podcasting pleasure. How's that for a tongue twister? Baby buggy bumpers. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickle peppers. If Peter Piper picked a peck of pickle peppers, how the hell does that go? Anyway, welcome to episode, what do we got here? According to my script, it says 89. Wow. Mike Ditka's number. This is the Mike Ditka episode. But, as you hear the music in the background, and obviously, you know, my nickname is Elton Jim. The name of this podcast is Captain Podtastic, which is a subtle reference to my favorite Elton John album, which is called Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. And if you've ever seen, if you've gone on and you see the logo of the podcast, that font, that script, is a takeoff from the Captain Fantastic logo from the album. So it all ties in, folks. There's very few coincidences here. This is very well thought out. As I've said many times, this show works on so many layers. It's like peeling an onion. Someday the historians are going to be going through these up to this point 89 podcasts, and it's going to be like Pompeii in Italy. They're going to just keep digging and finding things, new layers of references and entertainment. So consider yourself lucky that you were here when they were first created. Wow. How's that for some ego? Well, I have to, considering that my nickname is Elton Jim, and considering that I'm a huge Elton John fan, it would be ridiculous for me not to to comment on and share with you some of my thoughts about Elton John's recent announcement. Last week, on January 24th, Elton John announced that after almost 50 years of touring and more than 4,000 concerts at this point and counting, that he was going to retire from concert touring. And it was a very big announcement. It was streamed live on YouTube. In fact, you can go on YouTube and see it. There was a introductory little film with some of his best songs that were animated. And then he came out and played a couple of songs live from a venue in New York, and then Anderson Cooper was there to help him make the announcement, and then later there was a press conference. And I immediately got a lot of phone calls and messages and emails and Facebook questions and posts and messages from people. And it was an interesting day for me when that announcement came out. I should mention that even though he is retiring from touring, there is a difference. He is not retiring per se from show business. He is not retiring even from performing. Now, if you listen to me with any kind of regularity, I go by the name of Elton Jim, and like I said, the podcast has an Elton John reference to it. if you've listened to the podcast over the last year and a half, I don't really do a lot of Elton stuff at all. You know, I that's kind of my nickname, but when there is some reason to bring Elton up, I certainly will. But this is not an Elton John focused podcast by any means at all. It is just by name and title. But I thought that it certainly would be worth commenting and talking about this, because it is not only is it a milestone and a big deal in Elton's career, but as time goes on, we've seen over the last several years many well-known celebrities passing away that have been in the public eye for 30 or 40 years, and they reach the age of 60 or 70 or 80 and they pass away. It's just reality. And some of these people have been major forces in people's lives, and certainly major names in the entertainment world for the last 30 or 40 years. They're always around. They've always seemed like they've always been around, and suddenly they are gone, and that's what you have to come to terms with. And so, now I'll be honest with you. Not that I'm not always honest with you, but I will be super honest with you this time. I sort of had a hint that this announcement was coming, so this is not as shocking or as devastating to me as some may think. I sort of had a sense and some little inside information that that it may be coming. Wasn't sure when, but that there was an idea that that he would be slowing down his touring and actually having a major massive tours come to an end. But as I said earlier here, this is a retirement of sorts. He's not going away and riding off into the sunset. You still will see and hear of Elton John for many years to come, and he still will perform. He's just not going to tour in these major kind of massive traveling kinds of treks around the world where, it's 4 months on the road and two or three shows or four shows a week. That stuff is going to go away. And more power to him. He's going to be 71 years old in March, on March 25th. He has, as I said, performed more than 4,000 concerts in his career, which is outrageous. He did almost 100 shows last year. He usually does over 100, and he's been doing over 100 shows for the last 20 years. So he's been touring regularly for the last 20 years, almost 7 or 8 months out of the year. It's been a rigorous schedule. And so he has become a father several years ago. His kids are, I think, at this point, 7 and 5. And he's in his early 70s, so, he's a realist. He wants to spend as much time with his kids as possible. At the same time, I think he's doing this final 3-year tour, which will start sometime in September, and go through 2021, at least that's the plan, as a way to say thank you to his fans around the world, and give them, and in quotes, us, me, a chance to see him a few more times, and hopefully people who have never seen him a chance to see him. And I would urge you, if you have never seen Elton John in concert, I would urge you to go. You might think, oh, what's the big deal? But, there are only so many legends, and it's not just because I'm an Elton John fan that I call him a legend. He really is a legend, and he sold almost 300 million albums, which is outrageous number, and he has been a major star since 1970. That's almost 50 years. Oscar, Tony, Grammys, a knighthood. As I said, at this point, still as popular a concert attraction as he's always been, still sellouts. He's been playing Vegas for in several incarnations. I've gone to many, many of those shows, and they are always sold out. And I've seen him at 12,000 or 15,000 seat arenas, and they are still sold out. aside from the musical catalog, which is responsible for some of the most popular songs of all time, Your Song and Tiny Dancer and Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me and Crocodile Rock and things like that. So, you know, this is one of those moments that if you've never seen someone like Elton John, you really owe yourself to it, because this is kind of like, you know, a Frank Sinatra of another era, or a Dean Martin, or people like that, that are legends. 100 years from now, they still will be playing Elton John's music. And so it is one of those kind of, you know, milestone performers that doesn't come around every so often, and should be thankful that at the age of 70, he's still around, still performing, and you still have a chance to see him. I'm not going to get on my soapbox, but I would just, I think he certainly falls into that kind of category, even if you're not enamored with him or his music. I will say this. You know, his music is played so much on the radio, and some songs are played so often that sometimes you take him for granted. But if you've never seen him in concert, you owe yourself at least one time to see him, because what he brings to the stage, he is a consummate performer. And even at age 71, almost, what he brings to the stage in terms of his own musicianship, his own performance, and what he does for music. To see him play that piano, it's live, is unbelievable. It what you hear on record is only a hint of what he is able to do, which is actually, in many ways, it's kind of disappointing. His recorded music, while certainly features the piano, does not feature the piano the way he is able to play. And that is only if you see him live. I believe he's coming to the Chicago area in an initial part of this 3-year kind of farewell tour in late October. I think it's the 25th and 26th of October, or 26th and 27th, something like that. Yeah, 26th and 27th. So I would urge you, wherever you're at, if you're in Chicago where we tape and record this this podcast, but if you're wherever you're at listening to this, Elton John is going to come to your town in the next 3 years, and I would urge you to see him, because he is one of those performers. And as I said, one of the things that I've been most impressed, as I've talked many times, I'm at 171 Elton concerts, and in fact I will be going to see in the next 4 or 5 months. I've already got tickets in hand for like 6 through May. And now this tour is going to be announced, so I can only imagine how many more I have to see. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if you, like I said, how long you've been listening when I was back on the radio, but when I turned 50 a few years ago, my goal was to, when I was looking at how many concerts I had been to, and I was like a year and a half, 2 years away from turning 50, and I said, you know, I could, if I went to X amount of shows, I could hit my 150th Elton concert by my 50th birthday. And so it became this little kind of thing for me. It was, you know, 150 by 50 was kind of this thing I created for myself. And sure enough, the way it worked out, my 150th show was right here in Chicago on November 30th, 2013. And it was actually very cool, because from the stage, he actually recognized me and that accomplishment. And it's actually up on Facebook, which is really cool. Oh, I mean, on YouTube, which is really cool. And I was shocked that he would have said my name and acknowledged it, but it was really a special moment for me. And so I was joking, after I hit 150 by 50, well, my goal would be 200 by 60, which would give me 10 years to see, 100 shows or 50 shows. So that's 5 shows a year, which wasn't all that crazy for me, really. And so I've been actually doing that at a pretty good pace. Well, now, comes this announcement that he's going to end touring in 3 years. Well, I had a 10-year plan, Elton. You're supposed to give me a call and say, hey, Jim, how is this going to fit in with your plan? Because now if he quits in 2021, which is 3 years from now, then I've got to you know, jam in those 50 extra shows in only, what, 7 years as opposed to 10. So now I got to get on the stick here. So, I mean, geez, Elton, you could at least give me a call, give me a little heads up. But I've seen him 171 times as it stands. And as I said, I can understand why he's retiring. But one thing that has been amazing in the last couple of years, and I've seen this in person, the rigors of touring, the guy rarely sits still. He's always flying somewhere. He's around the world. He's playing somewhere. And, you know, even though in concert he's sitting at a piano, he's not running around for 2.5 hours, but, you know, it's still the travel, the planes, the getting there, the performing. You know, and then think about it too. I mean, I know for a fact. I mean, he's got a lot of arthritis because, you know, I mean, he's been sitting. He's in that sitting position, and his fingers and his knees and his thighs and his back. I mean, that's what he's been doing for the last 50 years. It's like carpal tunnel all over the body. And he's had a few medical issues too. And I'll tell you, about a year and a half ago, in Las Vegas, I went to see him, and I was sitting right toward the front, and he played the first three songs, and when he stood up to take a bow, as I said, I was right up, I was in the first or second row, right in front of him, so I mean, I could hear this. He went up, stood up to take a bow, and when he stood up, all of a sudden, If you've ever seen anybody have a sharp pain in their back where they just grab their back almost instinctually and wince where their face is kind of just scrunched up, and he stood up and went ew, and you could hear it and see it on his face, and my God, you know, there was still clapping going on, but I was so close that I heard it, and he kind of waved. And then he went back around by the piano bench, and he doubled over with hands on his knees and his head down. He was shaking his head, and he was just doubled over. And the applause stopped because everybody was like, what the heck's going on? And he was clearly in major pain. And, you know, now, you know, it's like, you know, you say, oh, what's 1 or 2 minutes? Well, when you're up on a stage, you know, and there's no sound, that's a long time not to fill that void in. And it was clear that there was something wrong. And it was a couple of minutes, and he was still not showing any signs of standing up straight again and, you know, and starting. And suddenly somebody, one of his assistants from the side of the stage came out and came to him. And it looked as if they were going to walk him off. And it's like three songs in. Sorry, gang, but, you know, this guy's not in any shape to do this. And as I said before, he's a very stubborn guy and he's very headstrong. And he is the consummate pro. And here was a sold-out Las Vegas auditorium, 4,000 people. The show has begun. He did three songs in. And I just think that the performer and the professional in him would not allow him to walk off that stage. And he waved the guy off in a very kind of almost angry, like, get out of here. And he sort of straightened up and he sat down, and you could see he was in pain, and he continued that show for the next 2 hours. And it was obvious that the pain was coming in and out. And I, as I said, I sat close enough, but he was still playing and singing and, you know, just giving it his all. And it was a gritty performance. And when he was done, I mean, the place, when the show was, the whole show was over, everybody could see that he was in pain. And he got this amazing standing ovation that just went on for minutes. And he was very appreciative. And he sort of gave a fist, like, thank you. Because the people were just appreciative of, they saw what he was going through. And he clearly had some kind of reoccurring pain. I never found out exactly what he had. But it was... it was really a great example of just a pure showman. And that's why this announcement, while, you know, it's bittersweet for me, because, you know, going to see an Elton John concert has been a major part of my life since I was 12 years old. You know, more than 40 years that I've been going. The first time I saw him was in 1976. I was 12 years old. Right here in Chicago at the old Chicago Stadium, which is not even there anymore now. The United Center is in its place. And my mom took me because I was only 12. And it was an amazing event, an amazing memory. And what I remember most about it was that it was so cool being, you know, this little kid. I had been a fan for about two or three years before that, like 9 years old. It's a very cool 9 year old. And, but to see him in person, I mean, up to that point, you know, you have to remember, 40 some years ago, there was no MTV, there was no CNN, there was no cable television, there was no streaming, there was no cell phones, for the most part, music, and especially pop music, was only on TV a couple of times a week. And you listen to the radio. Most rock stars you knew, your pop stars or your rock stars, through magazine covers or album covers. You rarely saw them moving. And you certainly didn't see them in person. I mean, we'd see them on a TV show every so often, but not even that. Because at that time, rock was still kind of considered a fad. So you were still having your older generation performers like, you know, Frank Sinatra and all those folks I mentioned earlier. They were on TV all the time. The rock stars were not. Rock was still kind of a fringe thing. Even though it had been around for 15 or 20 years, it was still not a mainstream thing. It wasn't until the 80s and MTV when rock and roll really became the established music for the next 20 or 30 years. So to see him in person was crazy, but was a thrill. But what I remember most about that concert was the roar of the crowd. I remember two things. The roar of the crowd. And I'd been in Chicago Stadium many times to see sporting events, especially like Blackhawk games. And the Chicago Stadium had an amazing acoustics. The sound bounced in there, and that place, when it got loud, it was unbelievable. The sound was bouncing off of everything in there. And I had never heard a roar. And the flash bulbs were, it was almost lit up, even though it was dark, when he first walked out. Never forget it. It was the roar, the sustained roar of that crowd, and the flash bulbs, and it was just wow. For a 12-year-old kid, it was just every sense was fired on there, and I will also remember I just got goosebumps. I mean, I just got goosebumps, and 40-some years later and 170 concerts after that, people say, why do you keep going? You know, you've seen these songs a million times. Why do you keep going? And you know why I keep going? Because I still get the goosebumps 40 years later. And I love those goosebumps. And I've gone and I've traveled, you know, around the country, in cars, in vans, on planes, waiting in airports, staying in, in hotels, you know, on one, just one night. Many times when I go to Vegas now at this point, I don't even stay there. I don't even get a hotel room. I fly into Vegas at 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I go to the concert at 7:30. It ends at 9:30, quarter to 10. I jump on in a cab. I go back to the airport, and I take a red eye, and I'm home at 5:30 in the morning. I don't even stay. And it's airports and whatever, but for that 2.5 hours, I'm addicted to those Elton Goosebumps. What can I say? And so as long as he performs, I will be there because I just love those Goosebumps. And that's the thing that just keeps me going. And, you know, some people say, geez, how could you go so many times or all this money you've spent? And I can't even begin to count the money I've spent. And you know what? I don't even care, to be honest with you. But the way I look at it is people spend $40,000 or $50,000 on season tickets to see baseball teams or hockey teams or basketball teams or football teams. I heard a number now that Super Bowl tickets are going for $5,000 a piece. So everybody has their thing. And this is my thing. And I've enjoyed it. It's enriched my life. It's gotten me off the couch to do things and to experience things and to see places and to meet people. I've met a lot of people that were Elton John friends that have now become some of my best friends. I have traveled to some crazy remote places. I've seen Elton from coast to coast. I've seen Elton in England. I've seen Elton in Prague. I've seen Elton in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And the great thing is when I've gone to many of these concerts, wherever they are, I'll be at a concert venue, and someone will say, "Hey, Jim." I inevitably see somebody. I've been very fortunate. I wrote for an Elton John fan magazine for about 20 years. I've written 8 of his official tour programs, the ones that are sold at the concerts, which has been a thrill to have written those and to go to the concerts and actually see people buy them and read them. I've been lucky enough to have met Elton 4 times. I've been lucky enough for him to have written me a personal letter, which I have framed in my home. It's just been a very cool life experience. It's enriched my life. It's one of my passions. And what I have to say is, too, I've seen him, like I said, the last couple of years, and especially, as I said, the rigors of touring have definitely begin to take a toll on him physically. And now when he, you know, gets up from during a concert, he'll get up to take a bow and walk across the stage and wave to people. And, you know, he's on that piano, so he likes to get up and walk to the other side of the stage of people that really can't see him all that well for most of the show. And, you know, it's kind of sad because he gets up very slowly and he's kind of hunched over when he walks and he's kind of hobbling. And you can see he's had a couple of knee surgeries and I think he's got some arthritis. But what is amazing, you see him and he looks every bit of his age, if not older, when he's kind of walking, especially after playing for a few, you know, an hour or two, you're in that same position. So he's kind of, you know, stiff and you can see him kind of bent over and, you know, hobbling and walking kind of slow. And then an amazing metamorphosis takes place. It's just to see it. You see this guy who looks every bit of his age, if not older. And then he sits down again to play another song. And he's like he's 25 years old. And that's why I don't believe he's ever going to quit performing. He will, you know, quit touring, but I don't believe he'll ever quit performing. Because that's just something, that's innate. That's in the DNA. And he does feed off the audience. And what's so cool about seeing him in Vegas during this residency he's had over the last several years is that in this particular show that he does now, if you sit in first 3 or 4 or 5 rows, during one of the last songs of the show, Saturday Night's Right for Fighting, they allow the people in the first 3 or 4 rows to go up on the stage and stand around the piano while he's playing. And I've done this, I can't even tell you how many times now. And it's you know, there's for a moment there, you forget you're on the stage. You're on the stage of this 4,000-seat arena, but you don't even care I mean, he's been within a foot of me playing the piano. And you're sitting there, it's almost like he's in your living room. And you can't believe you're this close, and you can't believe the moment of it. And as I said, I've met him a few times, and that's always been very cool. A lot of times people say, you know, be careful, don't meet your heroes, because you might be disappointed. And I have to say that I've met Elton four times. The last time was about 20 years ago, so it's been a while. But every time I've met him, it's been a really cool experience. And he's given me, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. And we sit and talk, and he give me a hug and everything. And so it's just been very cool. When I was that kid, that little 12-year-old kid, never in my mind could I have ever imagined what the next 40 years would have brought in terms of being an Elton John fan. And so, yeah, today's announcement is somewhat bittersweet, but I don't believe it's, you know, even though this tour is going to be over in 3 years, I don't believe it's going to be the last time that he will be performing. I bet he's going to finish that tour in 3 years, take a little break, and then he'll probably do another residency in Las Vegas where he'll be able to perform, you know, 2 or 3 times a year for a week or two. And once again, health permitting. But yeah, certainly it is kind of the end of the yellow brick road, if you will. Because, as I said, in my lifetime, Elton John's always been there. And he has played a major role. He's been a role model. He's become a great philanthropist. And he's been a great advocate for equality and certainly a forerunner in helping fight against AIDS. He's had his own AIDS foundation, the Elton John AIDS Foundation, for the last 25, 26 years. And so he's been an activist and a philanthropist, as well as a great performer. 30-some studio albums. I would urge you to check out Elton John's catalog. It's a lot more than just Crocodile Rock and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. But if I could, I would tell you some songs to even check out, which are not like the big hits. There's a song called High Flying Bird that you should hear. There's a song called Live Like Horses that you should hear. There's a song from Goodbye Yellow Brick Road called Harmony, which should have been a major, major song. It should have been released as a single. There's so many great songs that were never released through the radio in his prime. But, yeah, his music has been not just the soundtrack, and that's become kind of a cliche, not just the soundtrack of my life. It's been sort of my lifeblood. And so it is going to be strange when he finally packs it in. But I believe that we still have some time, and I still will be able to get to my 200th show sometime soon. But in the meantime, as long as Elton John is performing, you could bet that Elton Jim is going to be in the audience. And now we stroll over to the Pop Culture Club. We go down into our secret little meeting spot and find one of our gold ticket members, one of our charter members, Ms. Emily Armonetti. How you doing, Emily?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. As I said, Elton John has recently announced that he will be retiring from touring, not performing, touring. He's still going to make records. He's still going to be writing musicals and making albums, I'm sure. But, it's winding down. And
this little... is going to be a huge life change for you.
Oh, well, first of all, if this tour ends in 2021 like it's supposed to, am I going to have a lot of disposable income? Woo-hoo! we start recording this podcast today, I was talking with Minnie Cooper, our producer here, Jazzy Jasmine Ethel, and I was we were talking because in this Tribune building, the Tribune Tower, you know, in a few months, everybody's leaving here and they're going to totally refurbish this place and make it into an apartment, hotel, mixed use, retail, the whole thing.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. The Tribune newspaper is leaving, and so is the radio station. And, yeah, they've sold the building about a year and a half or so ago. And right now, when you go down to the parking lot and there, you know, there's big dumpsters. They're just going to the studs with this place. But I'm thinking that with the money that I'm going to be able to save after 2021, like I was talking with Jasmine, like I might be able to actually buy an apartment in this building. I'll be saving so much money.
Right.
I mean, my gosh. But yeah, this is going to be, in fact, I was laughing with Dean Richards, WGN personality. He said, how is your wife going to deal with you having you around the house?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not going to be any breaks now.
You're going to have to find someone else to follow, I think.
Well, there's still Bruce. Bruce is still around.
Some people do that. You know, no, yeah, exactly.
So I'm still...
some people do that. It's like people who used to follow the dead, you know.
Right.
They have, like, other jams.
Yeah, they have fish now. Right, so, exactly, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, I mean, first of all, he'll never stop performing. He's just going to start these major tours. I would assume he's going to continue to do shows and maybe do another Vegas residency. So I'm still, you know, I mean, health permitting, that he's okay. But yeah, it's kind of a bittersweet day. But hey, you know what? He has certainly given more than enough to his fans and to the public in terms of sharing his talent and his music. So if he wants to spend some time with his kids, I think he's got every right to do that. Although, as David Letterman said, when he left to spend more time with his family, he said, you know, the key is you should ask your family if they want you to do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, this was a big week for movie fans in terms of the Oscar nominations. And it was interesting. There were a few interesting snubs and a few interesting... names that you wouldn't have expected. But overall, when you saw the nominees, were you surprised in any big way, or how did you feel about them?
I mean, look, I keep reading that you know, the nominations are a breath of fresh air. I mean, I think that it's not super surprising when you look at what this award season has looked like. I think a lot of the categories, you know, the nominees are very similar to what we saw at the Golden Globes. And the SAG Awards and everything leading up to this. But there are some surprises. You know, you do have a few firsts and a few snubs that maybe we didn't expect, and maybe one snub that we maybe did expect. So I don't know. I think it's a mixed bag. I think there's some, you know, there were some that weren't very surprising. And then a few new faces that I'm really happy to see in the mix.
Well, first of all, the goal here, by first and foremost, is to make sure that all the envelopes are in the correct order.
Yes. Well, apparently they introduced some new protocol that is supposed to, you know, avoid the same thing that happened last year from happening again.
But I didn't
really read into it. Because I think, what more do they need to have in place? I mean, they had, you know, it's just that.
You know what the protocol is? Pay attention.
Yeah, right.
Stop taking selfies and stop texting. That's the only protocol you need. There was no breakdown in the system. There was a breakdown in logic and responsibility.
Competence.
Yeah, and maturity. Yeah. That's where the breakdown came. So first of all, we need to do that. Now, what I was not shocked at, everybody said, oh, this is a big shock. I was not shocked, and I think we may have touched on this. You know, James Franco was not nominated, even though he was nominated for a SAG Award, the Screen Actors Guild Awards, and he was nominated, and he won the Golden Globe, which is ironic in that if he had not won, you know, think about this. I mean, you know, he's come under fire for, you know, sexual harassment allegations. And I think that played a role, because when the Golden Globes were announced in early January, the Oscar ballots were still out in the with the voting the body, and so so that I think did affect him getting nominated. But think about this: which I haven't heard too many people talk about. So he won the Golden Globe, and he was all excited. And it was while he won that Golden Globe, while he was actually accepting the award, where the texts started to come out about his alleged sexual misconduct.
Yeah, the tweets.
Yeah, wasn't it Ally Sheedy that started to say, you know, when he won that?
Ally Sheedy, yeah. She posted a few they were sort of vague tweets. They were
kind of cryptic,
She had some cryptic tweets, that's right. And then she took them down, but she didn't take them down before people kind of saw them and screen grabbed them. So that word started to get around quickly. But then there were other women who also were tweeting, saying like, oh, nice time's up, in James Franco.
Yeah.
And kind of tweeting these, you know, Me Too-esque allegations. Or, you know, and so that's when it really started. And you're right, it really started when he was on stage at the Globes accepting the award. So, and then it sort of reached a fever pitch. You know, so I think the voting for the Globes were on, what, January 7th, and the voting for the nominations for the Oscars closed on January 12th. And from the time that he got his award at the Globes until the time that the Academy Awards nominations closed, the allegations really reached a fever pitch, and the press had been picking this up everywhere.
He
had been on TV a couple of times, but then even then, I don't think he did a really good enough job. I mean, I think he was okay in terms of handling the questions. I mean, it is a very awkward exchange, but and that's to be expected. And I guess at least he showed up. At least he answered the question. I was surprised, though, by the time the SAG Awards aired, I was a little surprised that he even showed up for that.
Yeah, well, he didn't look...
wasn't looking good for him.
Well, at the SAG Awards, he did not look happy. He looked very uncomfortable there. But here's my point. So do you think if he had not won the Golden Globe, right? And then, so he would not have gone up there and won that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that these allegations would have come out? And he probably, I would say, don't forget, he had been nominated for the Golden Globe, and those nominations were announced long before that, that ceremony. And nobody was tweeting about his sexual misconduct, allegedly. So
I don't know if it was the win so much as the showing up wearing the Time's Up pin. And my take on it is that that's what triggered.
Oh, so you think it was the pin? You think it was the pin more than the win? The pin more than the win. Good morning, everybody.
The pin more than the win. And here's the thing. Even if he hadn't won the award, you know, he still popped up on the red carpet wearing the pin. He's still seen sitting, you know, at the table with the pin on. So I really think that this would have happened anyway, whether he would have won.
Well, I'm wondering, did you notice the pin as much in all the red carpet stuff, or did you notice the pin more during during his acceptance speech, though? That's my point.
Well, I noticed everyone who was wearing the pin on the red carpet, and I also noticed a few people who weren't wearing the pin, who I maybe expected to wear the pin. But, you know, that's because they were really launching this initiative
at the Golden Globes
on the red carpet, and every actress who showed up there who is involved in the Time's Up initiative talked at great length about it in their red carpet interviews. So I noticed it on the red carpet, but that's only because I was very acutely aware that this was the main message.
I just wonder.
If Franco was wearing it. If I had ever had an encounter with James Franco that I felt was inappropriate or hurtful in some way, or, you know, threatening, or, you know, in any way fell into the category of misconduct, I would have noticed it on him immediately.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I just wonder if he.
Sitting at the,
I just wonder if his win gave that either him and the pin more exposure, because not everybody was watching the red carpet or everything else. But if you're watching the ceremony, now the camera is straight on him for 5 minutes, and there's his image, and there's him, and there's the pin, and there's the whole thing. And I wonder if that brought him more exposure, which then gave birth to these tweets. If he would have lost, I wonder if those allegations would have come out. It's impossible to predict, and you make a good point that, you know, he had the pin on, so if someone did see it, they probably would have, but you never know. And so it's ironic that it could have been his victory with the Golden Globes that wound up getting him in trouble. You would think that a victory is a good thing.
We'll never know.
Yeah, but that victory was almost his undoing. So I was not surprised to see him get snubbed in that category, because he certainly was a runaway favorite in those other two award shows, at least as a nominee. And to see him not get nominated, I think is a very obvious message. Mm-hmm. Now, the other one I found interesting, because as you said, a lot of these same number names, and like I said, I'll just go over these quickly. You know, you've been hearing for Best Picture, and these are the Oscar nominees now. Call Me By Your Name, The Darkest Hour, which is the Churchill film, Dunkirk, which is the war film from Christopher Nolan, Get Out, the kind of horror movie, but it's not a horror movie, which is interesting, by Jordan Peele. Mm-hmm. Phantom Thread, The Post, the Spielberg film, Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro. And then, of course, the biggest Oscar nominee getter, the Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, with Frances McDormand and Sam Rockwell, and Woody Harrelson. But here's the one, another interesting little snubby thing that you wonder, because don't forget, Hollywood is like high school with adults in it. I mean, that's what Hollywood is. It's filled with gossip. It's filled with being with the cool crowd. It's filled with looking, wearing the right thing, knowing the right people, saying the right thing. It's high school. And so what I found interesting is that Christopher Plummer, now, if you remember the little drama behind this, is that Kevin Spacey was accused of sexual harassment, and one of the right after Harvey Weinstein, and so he had been in this movie that was called All the Money in the World, and Ridley Scott, well known director, directed the film. And you know, Kevin Spacey was so toxic, and the movie was due to come out within a month or so after that, that they went back in, they erased Kevin Spacey, maybe digitally, however, and then they filmed new scenes with Christopher Plummer in the Kevin Spacey role.
Mm-hmm.
And now Christopher Plummer gets nominated for an Academy Award.
Yep.
So now, once again, you can't predict this. You can't say this for true, but I'm wondering, I haven't seen the movie, but Christopher Plummer, one of the great actors, he won an Academy Award a couple of years ago. I'm wondering how much of this was for Christopher Plummer's performance, or how much of this was a shot by Hollywood at Kevin Spacey to say, not only did they erase you from the movie that you already made and filmed and finished, but we are even going to nominate the guy who took your place.
Yes, and I think if that's the case, it's only underscored by the fact that Michelle Williams was not nominated for an Oscar, and she has actually been nominated, I think, at almost every other award ceremony in the lead up to this. Ridley Scott, who you mentioned was the director, he was not nominated, but I believe he was nominated at least for a Golden Globe for directing this movie. And I mean, let's face it, that could have been easy, having to reshoot all of this stuff and managing that, especially like from the director's standpoint. So this is actually really the only category in which that movie is being recognized,
right? So that's why I think it's just funny, is that, to your point, which is exactly correct, that's the only category, and major category at least, where that film was nominated, and it is for the one role that was the most controversial, and one, as I said, that it's almost like a shot at Kevin Spacey to say, hey, Kevin, this could have been your Oscar nomination. And who knows if Kevin Spacey was good or not. And now I'm just wondering, like, in the annals of Hollywood history, are we ever going to see the version of that movie with Kevin Spacey in it?
Well, I'm going to say no, because if they went to such great lengths to, you know, to reshoot all those scenes, I'm thinking they have buried that.
Well, what about 20? What about 20 years from now? What about 20 years from now?
I don't know.
You know, I mean, after the controversy and after all the furor and everything dies down in 5 or 10 or 15 years concerning that, you know, Kevin Spacey or that movie, I wonder if somewhere, if we still have DVDs or whatever, is that if there's some way that all of a sudden they're from the vaults, they're going to pull out the original Kevin Spacey version like they do so often with you know, deleted scenes and things like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. But
that seemed to me to be a very pointed message, once again, at Kevin Spacey. I don't know how deserving Christopher Plummer is or not, but that seemed a little strange.
Yeah. Well, man, it seems like the Academy is trying to correct a lot of their past wrongs this time around, and also maybe trying to send messages. So, you know, I mean, the James Franco thing, then you have this Kevin Spacey, the recast role. But there were also a lot of good things that came out of that, too. You know, I mean, Greta Gerwig was nominated for Best Director, and so was Jordan Peele for Lady Bird and Get Out, respectively. And I think that's sending a message, too. It's like, you know, a few years ago they were under fire for, you know, there was the whole, like, Oscar So White debacle.
Right.
And I think that given everything that's happened in the last year, they were potentially on track for an Oscar So Male debacle. And so it's nice to see that the Academy is trying to be a lot more inclusive and trying to open up these categories. And we're not just nominating all these old white men.
Oh, here we go. We hate the white man.
Well, I'm sorry, but you know what? You guys have had your time.
I didn't have my time. I didn't have any time. Don't blame me.
Well, I'm sorry, but
I didn't have any time.
You're just going to have to take one for the team.
Oh, but anyway, so were there any, I'm just looking at the categories here, and I think, as you said, for the most part, they played out pretty much as expected. I think there were a couple of categories where people thought that there could be a few wild cards. I mean, I think one of the interesting nominations is for The Big Sick, the original screenplay for that film, The Big Sick. But
The Big Sick also got snubbed in a few categories that you might have expected to see.
Right, but I still think, you know, I mean, once again, I think even the fact that was a kind of a film that it's more of a comedy. You know, so often comedies and comic performances don't really get Oscar nominations. It's always kind of been bypassed. And that was kind of a romantic comedy. It was a summer movie, you know what I mean? Which are often overlooked. And so I thought that was an interesting the fact that I think, to your point about trying to be a little more inclusive, I know that the Academy has been trying to get more members and get younger members and get more members of color, so that more a diverse, you know, kind of nominations can be there. And hopefully, I mean, the one thing that I've noticed that I've heard about people talking is that nobody feels that there were anybody that was nominated were not deserving. You know, it wasn't like, oh, well, that's just, I mean, like, to your point, you know, it wasn't like, oh, they just put, you know, Greta Gerwig in there because she's a woman. No, they put Greta Gerwig in there because that movie was critically acclaimed. Some people say it's one of the best movies of the year or in many years. And who knows? A small film like that a lot of people did not see. It was not a big hit in terms of box office. But the fact that smaller films like that can get Oscar attention and ultimately Oscar nominations, I think does play to the fact that, to use your phrase, the Academy is not just filled with old white guys anymore.
Well, and this is the thing. As you said, Greta Gerwig, totally deserving of this nomination. But a few years ago, you know, even Spielberg probably would have gotten that spot. But,
right.
you know, instead,
yeah.
I mean, you only have so many nominations. Or Ridley Scott would have gotten it, you know. So it's nice to see that actually, sorry, Steven Spielberg, you're not nominated this year. You know, we need to make way for other people who have enormous talent. So, you know, same thing in, like, the Best Actor category. I mean, Daniel Kaluuya got nominated for Get Out, and Tom Hanks did not get nominated. He was snubbed.
Right,
now,
yeah.
Tom Hanks is someone who, he's almost reached Meryl Streep status. Every time he makes a film, he gets a nomination. So, you know, it's nice to see that we're not just turning to the same old people, and there is a lot of new talent out there, or talent that's been around for a while that hasn't really been recognized. I would put Greta Gerwig in that category, not necessarily for directing, because I think this is her kind of first time around directing a film, but she's certainly been around. She's been doing a lot of writing. She's been acting, and, you know, for
I think she's going to get, I think she's going to get the original screenplay. I don't think she's going to get director, but I do think she's going to win the original screenplay, because I think that, that she is kind of one of the up and coming people, and one of the, you know, the name right now, there's a big buzz about her. But to your point in the lead actor category, I agree with you completely about you know, the Tom Hanks exclusion. But at the same time, how many times are we going to continue to nominate Denzel Washington?
Right. Well, he was a little bit of a surprise, I think, in this category.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, I don't think
people really expected him to be nominated.
Did you ever even hear of that movie? I mean, that movie came and went. I don't even know anybody who saw that movie.
Yes, but see, then that has to. I hate to take us back to James Franco, but is it possible that Denzel got in there because
yeah,
there
right.
was kind of this late backlash
yeah.
against James Franco, kind of at the 11th hour?
Oh, so, I believe. Yeah, I no. think so. But I'm surprised that, to your point, though. So it's funny that Tom Hanks did not fill that spot, but Denzel Washington did.
Right. Yes. But now, so and I think overall, it's really nice to see that many of the films that are being recognized are female-driven films. You know, like Lady Bird, we talked about, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which Frances McDormand has been cleaning up this award season for her role in that. The Shape of Water, The Post, you know, so I think that is refreshing as well. I think you're just seeing more female-driven themes and projects being recognized.
Well, I think next year they're going to eliminate all the male categories.
Right, yes. That's a good idea.
I think they're just going to, I mean, right now, they you know, they're...
There will be a best actress.
Yeah.
You know, category. Then there will also be a best actor who is not a male.
Yeah.
Category.
Yeah,
and, you know, and things will really start to turn around.
No, I believe. Yeah, I believe. I think that this year there it was like a slow thing. They're slowly weeding it out, but I think next year, I think they're going to get rid of Jimmy Kimmel, and then they're going to get rid of all the male categories, and all the best pictures cannot have any men in them.
Right. And, actually, pretty much men will not have jobs anymore in any industry.
In any industry at all. And that's the way. And that's the way it should be.
Which is why it's a good thing that you're going to have more disposable income.
Yeah. Or
you're going to need it. Save it up. You will never be getting a paycheck again.
Well, I haven't in a while anyway. So to me, that's no difference. I've already been blacklisted. I've already been feeling the effects of Me Too. I didn't even do anything. But yeah, I think what you're going to wind up seeing, you know, in terms of the actual winners, I think Allison Janney has been, like you said, Frances McDormand has been cleaning up in the lead actress. I think Allison Janney from the Tanya Harding movie has been cleaning up.
I have to say, poor Lori Metcalf, because when the award season started, she had all the buzz.
I know.
Like, at every turn.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Allison Janney is great in I, Tonya, and I really want to see it. I haven't made it to the cinema yet to see it, but I really want to before the Oscars. I need to get out and see a lot of these films. But I wanted nothing more than for, like, Aunt Jackie to win an Oscar. And it's not looking right. like it's going to happen.
Well, at least you'll see her in March when the Roseanne show comes back.
Yes, yeah.
But, yeah,
I think... It might make it easier for her to go back to the Roseanne set if she doesn't win an Oscar. You know, it'd be a lot harder, I think, to return to that role having, you know, just come off of an award-winning season for her. So,
but I think you could put in the bank Gary Oldman. He's been winning everything for playing Churchill in The Darkest Hour. Even though there's a lot of hype for Timothée Chalamet, and even Daniel Day-Lewis, because which is apparently this may be his last movie ever. But I think that Gary Oldman's
That's
been winning.
But I feel like I've heard that before, so I don't know if I really.
But I think Gary Oldman is going to win. I think Frances McDormand's going to win. I think it'll be interesting to see if Sam Rockwell wins, because I know that Woody Harrelson has been getting a lot of play, and they have to give something to The Shape of Water too. I wonder if I don't think The Shape of Water is going to win Best Picture, but I wonder if Guillermo del Toro might win Best Director just because. That movie is from a visual and a story standpoint. I mean, it's an incredible experience, and it's so creative. And so I think they're going to get the first.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I mean they're leading the pack. They've got 13 nominations. But the other thing, I mean, you know, the Laurie Metcalf, you know, Allison Janney's showdown at every awards show has kind of struck me. But it's also struck me that.
Sally Hawkins.
Totally blanking. Sally Hawkins, yeah. Sally Hawkins seemed to be the favorite going into awards season for Best Actress, and she has lost at every turn to Frances McDormand.
Yeah, I think
kind of makes you wonder, does this mean Three Billboards might end up having, you know, a lot of upset in other categories? That
yeah, I think...
Does it also mean... that, you know, you've got this film that's leading with 13 nominations, could they possibly walk away with nothing?
Well, yeah, that's why I think at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to win Best Picture, but I do think Guillermo del Toro is going to win, just because I think the fact that it got that many nominations, but as you say, I think there are, sadly, you know, the Oscars are almost like, you know, like handicapping, you know, a horse race or a sporting event right now, and based on these other things, you can almost, without even seeing the movies, you can almost predict these. And there always are a few, wild cards that are thrown in there, and they go, "Whoa, where did that one come from?" But a lot of times, it does follow the script, and it just seems. I think that to your point about where did Frances McDormand come from, I think that Frances McDormand. Is very well respected in Hollywood. I think she's in the cool crowd. She's always been a very strong advocate and activist, and so I certainly think that in this current swirl here of the Me Too and the female empowerment movement that is so strong right now, I think that's what's brought her up. Over everyone else, just because I do think that she does have a lot of support of just a lot of people in Hollywood as a great actress and a great activist, and I think that's what's helping her. I think, you know, I don't think that she's getting it given to her, but I think that that helps, you know.
Yeah, but I do also wonder, though, how much her Golden Globe speech might affect her chances for winning, because, you know, if you remember, she essentially said, like, "Let's give other people a chance."
But then she referred to it
as a doorstopper. So I'm not sure they're going to necessarily look kindly on, you know, because you could say she was joking, but I don't think she was joking, you know. So
yeah, well,
maybe
who knows?
She has, let's say, recused herself of any future, you know, award recognition just by virtue of her speech at the Globes.
Yeah. Well, that's why you have to watch. That's why you have to watch the thing on March 4th on ABC, Jimmy Kimmel. Make sure those envelopes are in the right categories, and we will see who will win and who won't. And I'm sure you're going to be watching all the red carpet stuff and all the rest. And I'm just wondering, you know, what are is the black dress and the pin, is there going to be a new pin for the Oscars and a new color? I mean, who knows? You know, so that's...
Well, I'll tell you what. I think the Time's Up pin is not going anywhere anytime soon, although maybe men will be a little bit more thoughtful about when they're wearing it. We'll see. I don't know. You have to make sure you've got no skeletons in your closet, I think, if you're a man.
Oh, I know.
And you're still up wearing that pin.
I don't even think you should be walking outside.
Just sit at home in the dark under the blanket with your Time's Up pin on.
That's probably the best advice you can give. So, well, thank you, Emily. We will see how things are on Oscar. That's only about a month and a half away, so that's almost right here. So we shall see how things go. Have a good week, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks. You too.
Take care. And that concludes another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted up. Thank you for finding us and listening to us. Your loyalty is much appreciated. I'm Jim Toronto, and I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic is the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.